Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. This was Governor Ron DeSantis 1 year ago.
Last night, the Department of Health announced 17 new cases of COVID-19 in Florida. Florida has 51 cases, 45 Florida residents, 6 non-residents.
It was the very early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. Florida was already in a state of emergency because of the virus, and the governor was expanding, closing nursing homes to visitors across the state. Testing was in its infancy. The rush was on for personal protective equipment, cleaning supplies, and toilet paper. And by the end of this day, March 13th, 2020, public school classrooms across the state would close.
If you look at the last few days, you have sporting events canceled, all this stuff. I think that it's something that is, people are erring on the side of caution in the private sector, government organizations, and I understand that and think that that makes a lot of sense in many respects. But I also think that this is something that we'll be able to get through. You know, we're going to have to do this for the foreseeable future, but it's something I think that the people of Florida will be able to get through.
That was 1 year ago this week as Florida and the nation quickly fell into the grasp of the COVID-19 pandemic. 1 year later, almost 2 million Floridians have caught the virus. Most have recovered. Over 32,000 have died, most of them 65 years old or older. And that age group has been the focus of the state's vaccination program a year into this pandemic. More than 1.5 million seniors have completed their vaccinations, according to state data. And beginning Monday, the state is lowering the age of eligibility to anyone 60 years old. On Thursday this week in Lake City, the governor suggested before the end of the month, any adult who wants a shot may be able to get one.
We could be in a situation, go down to 60 on Monday, we get to 55 relatively soon, and then if the supply floodgates really open, we could be in a position sometime in April where it's just available and people can get it.
The governor's suggestion came just hours before President Joe Biden said he would direct states to open eligibility to all adults by May 1st. But there remain plenty of vaccination questions and confusion. Already, some places are offering shots to people as young as 16 years old with certain medical conditions. Some are going on the honor system. No proof necessary. There are more places to get vaccinated this week, more people getting vaccinated, growing confidence in having the supply of vaccines, but also confusion and frustration over who and where the doses are. So what are your questions about who's eligible for the shot and where the doses are? Almost 4 million people have received at least one dose of vaccine in Florida. What's your experience? Phone lines are open here live on this Friday, 305-995-1800 to join our conversation, 305-995-1800. You can find us on social media as well. Look us up on Twitter at Florida Roundup. WLRN's healthcare reporter Veronica Zaragovia visited the FEMA-supplied vaccination site in Miami on Wednesday.
When I got here, the line of cars was so long that a security officer told me it would take 4, maybe 5 hours to actually get to park. And then you come out and you wait in a line to try to go through a series of tents to get your vaccine. And it's been orderly. I haven't seen any problems. What I will say is that I'm seeing some staff from FEMA that are saying out loud that if you don't meet the qualifications that the state has set for who can get vaccinated here, that you won't get vaccinated. So I think they're trying to be more organized. There was one person who said he thought that you could be 18 or older, and he spent 9 hours here, and then he was turned away because he didn't meet any of those qualifications.
That was on Wednesday. Veronica joins us now live on this Friday. Veronica, why has there been so much confusion about who is eligible for vaccines at these FEMA sites?
Well, thank you, Tom. Things changed so quickly. I mean, I was at this Miami-Dade College site on Saturday. Everything was running smoothly. And then far further south in Florida City, in near Homestead, there was a temporary site that is now closed, but it was open for a week. And on that Saturday, they had such a low turnout of people that it seems it's unclear. I've tried to understand who was responsible for this, but staff allowed people who who didn't meet the qualifications that we'll go over later to get vaccinated. And so, of course, the rumors started spreading through social media, and hundreds of people showed up. And that rumor actually lasted through about Wednesday of this week, when I was still finding people at Miami-Dade College who were showing up thinking that anyone was getting vaccinated.
So what are the rules and how are they being applied at these sites?
So the rules are a bit different from the state sites. In these federally supported sites, you can be a person who is 65 or older, a healthcare personnel 18 or older, a person who works in pre-K through 12 education who is 18 or older, and then you can be a person who has an underlying medical condition 18 and older, and you have to either bring a doctor's note. And just to be clear, this is for the three federally right. supported sites that I'll explain, and that form can be on your you can have the Department of Health form that we have a link to on our site on your phone or with you, or a doctor's note. And then everybody else, like the firefighters and police officers, 50 and older.
Yeah, boy, the rules are different depending upon who's in charge of the site. You are in Florida City, in far South Florida, over the weekend, speaking with folks who were hoping they were eligible. Let's listen to one.
It makes you not want to go back at all, especially when you think that there's no real clear messaging. It's the problem of, hey, Orange City is allowing it to all educators, but in Palm Beach, you have to be K through 12 and 50 and older. And the governor has these direct orders that seems some places are following it and some aren't. And you just kind of have to be lucky on a Saturday that doesn't have demand for it to be 18 and plus. It just doesn't make any sense.
So Veronica, have you picked up on any work toward clarity of eligibility on these various sites?
Yes, and Tom, just to clarify, I was at the Miami-Dade College site on Saturday, but I didn't make it down to Florida City, okay. But it was such an uproar that I've been in touch with people. So I interviewed Mirage Hawk, who's 25, and just wanted to get vaccinated because he takes care of his father. And so if he gets COVID, he's out for 2 weeks and his father needs somebody because they're his mother works full time. Yeah. And so I just wanted to get his voice out there of the frustration. And when you get turned away, people just feel like, you know what, I'm not even going to get vaccinated. I'm not going to even bother with this. And so it's just causing a lot of frustration. But I have to say that I think the officials are understanding that the media, we want to help to get the correct information out. So now I asked that we could please get an update when there will be a press conference. And it was very much appreciated that yesterday we had an organized press conference and information on who can get vaccinated where.
Yeah, it seems to be a little bit more clarity developing, particularly with eligibility at the FEMA supplied sites. Veronica Zaragovia, healthcare reporter in Miami with WLRN. Thanks, Veronica.
Thanks, Tom.
Your phone calls 305-995-1800. Jamie in Tampa, thanks for calling. You're on the radio.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. How about you?
Better than I deserve. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a new listener and a first-time caller.
Awesome. What can I do for you? Tell us your story.
Well, Tom, my question is, you know, a lot of people, especially because I'm African-American, a lot of people in my nationality are afraid to get the vaccine because there are people dying from the vaccine and all these little conspiracy theories. And, I don't need to go into them. I think you probably heard or read most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what is the state? I think the big problem is how do you ease those fears? Because people are worried, like, oh my God, like, is the vaccine? Tom, here's what I heard. The vaccine is a microchip that the government is going to use to control you. I'm like,
right, not really? True. Yeah, that's one really? Of many really? Of the conspiracy theories that have been out there that have been disproven over and over and over again. Vaccine hesitancy, as you mentioned, Jamie, is a very real thing, particularly in the Black community and Hispanic community and other communities that have not had access to health care, traditionally speaking. Have you tried to get the vaccine, Jamie?
Given what I've been hearing, it's got me hesitant because I'm thinking, oh my God, they're not telling us what's in this thing. They're, you know, all these little little worries that.
Well, so they are telling you what's in the thing. It's gone through the normal federal, Food and Drug Administration review process.
Right.
But it sounds like you're not getting the information to address your hesitancy. Is that fair to say?
That's right, Tom. And I couldn't say more. I think the problem is we're not hearing the nuanced guidance that we need to be hearing. And what happens is, people are afraid to. People say, well, Jimmy, people have died from that vaccine. I'm like, well, we know that, but this is.
They have been extremely, incredibly rare instances of that. There have been some, and but they have been documented and researched and incredibly rare. Jamie, I appreciate the call. We're going to talk about vaccine hesitancy in just a moment. I want to welcome Stephanie Colombini, healthcare reporter at WUSF in Tampa, back to our program. The youngest people, Stephanie, eligible for this vaccine under the state rules are police officers, firefighters, K-12 school employees, at least 50 years old. How are these age-based rules playing out in the Tampa area?
It really depends where you are, Tom. As we've talked about, the FEMA federally supported sites and some pharmacies like CVS and Walmart involved in federal programs, they're vaccinating people, teachers of all ages, K-12. Hillsborough County has also decided at its county-run sites to do K-12 of all ages. But then in neighboring counties, you have people following those state rules and at state-run sites where it's got to be 50 plus. So you really have to do your research.
And so what do public health officials you've been speaking with say about this age-based strategy that Governor DeSantis has been using?
I think it was the right way to start. Everyone agrees reducing mortality rates, protecting the most vulnerable to death when it comes to COVID-19 was a good strategy. But we're at the point now where we've kind of saturated that market and we're really wasting a lot of critical time by clinging to these age strategies, even waiting this whole week to open it up to age 60. We're seeing counties that have open appointments. We're seeing, clinics get canceled. I live right down the road from the FEMA site in Tampa. It's a ghost town most of the day. It's really kind of troubling to see. And that's just because most of the people who are eligible right now have gotten a chance to get it. Unfortunately, not everyone, but we're at the point where we really could open it up to more people. And public health experts have told me, getting at those essential workers, regardless of age, who are in positions where they can really transmit the virus is where we need to focus.
Stephanie Colombini, healthcare reporter at WUSF in Tampa. Thank you, Stephanie. In Tampa, Deidre is calling in. Deidre, thanks for your phone call. What's happening?
Hi there. Yeah, I wanted to share my experience getting vaccinated. I am adjunct faculty at the University of South Florida in the College of Public Health. Mm-hmm. And over the weekend, last weekend, I received notice on social media that some colleagues had been getting vaccinated as educators at a federally run site in Tampa.
These were college educators, however.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. And I had not previously interpreted the law that way, but when I saw that they were getting the vaccine, I decided to show up the next morning with all my documentation that I work at USF and that I teach.
Yeah.
So when I arrived there, I received the vaccine around 7:30 a.m., but by 9:30, when some more colleagues had arrived, they had begun turning them away, saying it was a misinterpretation. And then on top of that, I'm also a part-time caregiver for a 94-year-old grandfather of mine, and I share that responsibility with my 64-year-old mom. So I had a bit of, survivor's guilt almost, vaccine receiver's guilt that my mom hadn't yet got it and that I had.
Yeah. Deidre, I hear you, and we've heard that a lot from some folks, and the healthcare professionals ultimately will say they want as many people to be vaccinated that can possibly be vaccinated, regardless of age and occupation, to reach that herd immunity as fast as possible. Kelly Wiley is now with us, investigative reporter at WJXT in Jacksonville. Kelly, there are three vaccination sites that are FEMA supplied in Jacksonville. How have they been operating in terms of demand?
Well, hi there. I'm happy to be here with you guys. The sites here locally in Jacksonville, similar to what you're hearing in other places and what we've heard on your show today, they're not that busy. They, in the beginning, had a burst towards the end of the day, but most of the people that came towards the end of the day were actually not eligible under the governor's executive order or through the federal directive for school teachers at the time. A lot of them were not even 50, but they were being turned away because they weren't eligible. Yeah. So really seen in the beginning there, and still now, you can walk in, there's not much of a line, but a lot of people being turned away. As far as numbers, since the site opened to yesterday, last full day, they've been able to do, I think, 32,000 doses. That's their capability.
Yeah. Kelly, but let me bring in another voice here to this conversation quickly before we have a break. Chibeli Karazana is with us, economy reporter at the 19th. Chibeli, nice to have you on. What are the racial distributions look like of these vaccinations that are happening in Florida?
Yeah, thank you so much, Tom. And, you know, it's sort of going to the question that we had earlier from Jamie about kind of the racial distribution, right? And so we are seeing, you know, white people by and large are receiving vaccines at a much higher rate, even though these sites are supposed to be in areas where minority communities are able to access them a little bit more. And, you know, the reality is we are starting to see that pick up here in Orlando. I was at the site recently, and it was located very, very close to a majority Black and Latinx neighborhood. And so a lot of the folks I spoke to said, you know, if this wasn't here, I don't think I would have come to get my vaccine. I wouldn't have gone across town. And there was other, you know, aspects to it. This is a FEMA site. There was no appointment necessary. Right. You know, if your transportation is an issue, you can get a ride at any time and show up. It was moving fairly quickly. And so location, in the sense of these FEMA sites, is really, really critical to be able to bridge that gap that is still there in terms of communities of color.
Yeah, Kelly, what's that experience like in North Florida, in the Jacksonville area?
As far as race, I mean, the site in Jacksonville, the FEMA site, is on the north side. It's in an area, and they've said this before, where they thought they would be able to capture a lot of the minority community. This was a area where we thought, where they thought access would be an issue, and that's why they placed it there. But when we're looking at who's actually showing up to the site, just anecdotally, what we see, yeah, is definitely not all African-Americans, Black people that are coming to the site. It looks like, honestly, a lot of white people coming to the site, people who are learning about it. And of course, if you're a resident, you can go to any of the sites. But what the concern is that there are not enough of this minority group that they're worried about health-wise coming to the site. They've started to do some outreach. We saw them at the Dollar General in a North Side community canvassing, handing out flyers. When I go to talk to some of the people in these areas, especially at some of our government housing properties that I've been going to in the last couple of days, a lot of the 65 and older crowd who are Black and Latino are telling me that they are not wanting to get it.
Kelly, let me just put that final question to Chibeli about hesitancy. We only have about 30 seconds left, Chibeli, I apologize, but how are public officials addressing this hesitancy issue?
Yeah, look, you have to meet people where they are, and you also have to have representative members of that community as part of this outreach, right? To help people understand that it is safe, that I have gotten it, this person has gotten it. And so you have to really build that trust. And, you know, the Biden administration has just approved a lot of $14 billion for community vaccination centers that are hopefully going to reach folks and deploy, you know, mobile vaccination centers where they are with sort of trusted messengers from their community.
Chibeli and Kelly, thank you so much for sharing your reporting with us. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kelly Wiley with WJXT, an investigative reporter in Jacksonville, and Chibeli Karazana, an economy reporter at the 19th. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. A lot more to come. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. Thanks again for listening. The story of vaccinations in Florida has moved from one of big demand and little supply to questions over who can get doses and where. two locations have garnered a lot of attention, a community in Manatee County and an exclusive area in the Florida Keys. Both are wealthy, white, and tend to be Republican. The governor and others have defended vaccinating these areas by targeting areas with residents who are 65 years old or older. In the Keys, the Miami Herald reported the Ocean Reef Club received 1,200 vaccine doses in January when supplies were very limited statewide. Last week, the governor said his office played no role in supplying the medicine to that community.
That was not a site that we were involved in the Keys. What that was one of the South Florida hospital systems went to this community, vaccinated a bunch of seniors. I think that's great. I want seniors to get shots. I think they did a good job doing that. We just weren't involved with it in any way, shape, or form.
But the hospital system that supplied the vaccine to Ocean Reef in the Upper Keys said the state asked it to deliver doses to the area. Now, a little later on in this program, we'll be talking about the governor's rising stature among Republicans, including those outside Florida. You can join that conversation now. Line up those calls at 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or send us your thoughts on Twitter at Florida Roundup. The other vaccine location that has attracted scrutiny was in February near Bradenton. Jessica De Leon is the law enforcement reporter at the Bradenton Herald. Jessica, welcome to the Florida Roundup. So how did the Lakewood Ranch vaccination pop up back in February? How did that happen? Walk us through the process that you've uncovered.
One of our county commissioners, Vanessa Ball, who's actually the chair of the commission, was reached out to by a local developer, Rex Jensen. And Rex Jensen had gotten pulled into this when he received a call from a fellow developer and the governor was on the line. And they basically asked him, hey, can you host this? We want you to host this vaccine site in one of your communities. He was not comfortable doing that. He says he did not have the manpower to put on the event. He brought in essentially Vanessa Ball, commissioner, into the fold. And what transpired then was behind the scenes with unbeknownst to the rest of the commission, Vanessa Ball was working with Rex Jensen to organize this event, which turned into an exclusive vaccine event for only two zip codes, which happen to be two of the richest zip codes in Manatee County and are both in her district.
So what role did the governor or the governor's office play in putting this pop-up together?
I'm not privy to obviously the entire conversation. I have spoken with Rex Jensen, but I mean, he wanted it to be in this community, which is, you know, gated communities out east, but more well outside of town. The other developer on the line was Pat Neal. Essentially, the site was hosted by the state, but it was at the governor's direction of where this would be. And then the organization all happened, this other developer, Rex Jensen, working with the commissioner, decided on the site, Premier Sports Complex, she reserved it. The state came down, they did their site evaluation. She directed the public safety director and staff to essentially pull from, the county had developed a random standby vaccine pool, whereby people, the seniors, 65 and older, were randomly selected when appointments became available. Well, she instead had them pull everyone who had listed their address with these two zip codes. And from those 7,000 plus folks, these 3,000 people were selected.
That list is now the subject of an investigation by the Manatee Sheriff's Office, isn't it?
It went a little further than that, actually. She then subsequently created a VIP list, if you will, a list of people she wanted to make sure were included. And the list included herself, the developer, Rex Jensen, his father, and her two former neighbors. And she sent this list to the public safety director with the subject line, names for list, and then in the body of the email, names for vaccination requested, and then listed them and herself with all the information that would be needed to make the appointments.
Any idea of eligibility for people on that list at that time in February?
Yes, actually, because I reached out to them. Ironically, Rex Jensen and his father do not even live in the two zip codes that this event was supposed to be exclusive for.
So thus ineligible under the rules, at least.
Correct. And in fact, Rex Jensen's father had already had Corona, so he then later turned down the appointment. Vanessa Ball's two former neighbors did admit to me accepting the appointments and getting vaccinated, claimed they had no idea Vanessa had been involved in making sure they got those appointments, but saw nothing wrong with it and said they were glad they knew who to thank for it. And also the couple, they support her politically and they also do business with her store. She owns a jewelry store out there.
I see. And what about the governor's connection to these developers, Jensen and Neal?
Well, Pat Neal is, you know, he's donated lots of money to the governor's previous campaign. So clearly there's that connection. What's transpired most recently is part of these text messages that were being exchanged between Rex Jensen and Vanessa Ball were how this event would provide some good exposure for the upcoming 22 election and help get the governor some more exposure out east where he, quote unquote, was, you know, better known.
In fact, one of the text messages explicitly mentioned 22 in reference to 2022, the gubernatorial election year.
Correct. Rex Jensen had mentioned to Vanessa Ball that the governor might show up. We should try to see if that would help him get some exposure here, to which she responded, excellent point. After all, 22 is right around the corner.
Jared Moskowitz, the outgoing director of emergency management in Florida, explained to this program in February that Manatee County had one of the lowest vaccination rates for people 65 years old and older at the time. He said,
we were looking to do the same thing we've done in Broward, we've done in Dade, we've done in Palm Beach, Orange, Duval, many other counties, which is to go to where seniors live, to go to these 55 and older plus communities.
So what evidence have you found about how similar or different this Manatee County pop-up clinic was?
Well, first of all, one of the problems with it is the fact that it was made exclusive to these two zip codes, because if it was truly with that intention, as there was a later event that was held just a couple weeks ago at a manufactured home community, Colony Cove, and that was held in that community, but that was open to everyone. That was not the case at Premier. Premier was only open exclusively to the folks in these two zip codes.
Premier is Lakewood Ranch?
Correct, the Premier Sports Complex out in Lakewood Ranch. Another issue with it is out east, those zip codes out there actually have some of the lower rates of infection rates of COVID-19 in our county, where other areas in our county where a lot of 65 plus folks do live have much higher rates. And even though there have been some events there, those events have only had, you know, 300 or 500 vaccines per event. So it just exasperates the inequity if you're having these small events in these hard hit communities with limited access, and then a large event exclusive for residents out in the communities that have been less affected by COVID-19. Additionally, another problem with it, just a month before, the governor had come out and visited our drive-through vaccination site that's been set up with the county and touted what a good job Manatee County had done with the vaccine rollout and hinted at giving us a larger allotment. You have to understand the state controls how many vaccines each county gets. So the state had the power to increase our allotment, and they certainly indicated that they would, since the county had proven how much they could push out. They have the ability to push out about 3,000 a day. So to bring a three-day event that can push out the same amount, it would seem like it would be more productive just to provide those 3,000 vaccines to the county, who could push them out quicker and pull from their random pool, a system that was already in place and voted unanimously by the county commission.
Director Moskowitz also described this Manatee County pop-up clinic as no different than partnering with churches.
It's no different than partnering with the churches that we've had to select to make sure that we have equitable distribution in our minority communities.
Do you see it the same way?
I don't, and I refer to some of my previous statements, it's not the same, because you want to hit, you should want to hit the more vulnerable populations, the communities, the lower socioeconomic communities who've been harder hit and have less access to the vaccines. And that's not the case out in Lakewood Ranch and these communities where these vaccines were offered exclusively to. So I don't think you can compare and say they're nowhere near the same. And then to compare a church event that has 500 vaccines offered to a event out east that had 3,000 vaccines offered, I think you're just further exasperating the inequity between communities.
As you have continued to report on this Manatee pop-up clinic and have uncovered the evidence that you've uncovered, any fallout locally or regionally in the days since?
Oh, there's been plenty of fallout. Vanessa Ball is now facing, she's currently under two criminal investigations, one unrelated to vaccines, but she's being investigated by the Manatee County Sheriff's Office after a complaint was lodged that she misused her public position in creating this VIP list and getting appointments for herself or others. She's also facing an ethics complaint. So she faces, you know, potential criminal charges, fines, and removal from office. There's also been calls by Nikki Fried, the state's top Democrat, for her to be removed. She's calling on DeSantis to remove her and calling for the FBI to step in and investigate all this pay-for-play action that's happening with vaccines. Charlie Crist has also called for the DOJ to come in and investigate. And the community, there are a lot of angry people. I mean, you have to understand, some of these seniors have been waiting since the first day in January, early January, when they signed up for this vaccine pool and are still waiting for a vaccine. And to know that preference was given to people because of where they lived, that doesn't sit well with a lot of people. And there have been a lot of people calling for her to resign and or calling for her to be removed. There have been two attempts so far to remove her as chair from the commission. Both attempts have failed. So there's a lot of angry people about this.
What do you think about any local or lasting impact to the stature of Governor DeSantis in this region?
A lot of people are upset. I've seen a lot of the emails that have been sent to the governor and the commissioner. And I think people are gonna remember come election time that, you know, those with money and power were given preference when it came to a life-saving vaccine.
Jessica De Leon is the law enforcement reporter at the Bradenton Herald. Jessica, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Governor DeSantis has been gaining national attention and in some circles praise for his handling of the pandemic here in the Sunshine State. Florida was the first state to reopen schools. It remains only one of five states with any statewide order requiring classrooms to be open to students. It was also among the first states to reduce restrictions on businesses last spring. The governor has been cheered and criticized for not instituting a statewide mask mandate. Henry Olson is a senior fellow at the Conservative Ethics and Public Policy Center think tank and a Washington Post columnist. He recently wrote a column for the Post on DeSantis's growing clout nationwide amongst national Republicans, what he must do to set himself apart from the pack from other 2024 presidential hopefuls. Henry joins us now here on the Florida Roundup. Nice to have you, Henry. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
What specifically, in terms of the governor's handling of the pandemic here in Florida, has garnered the praise outside of Florida amongst Republicans?
Yeah, the thing to remember about Republicans is that they tend to want to have a balance between fighting the virus and protecting freedom and the economic lives of all Floridians or all people. And they believe that Ron DeSantis hit that balance, that he was able to keep personal freedom by not having that mask mandate, that his policies kept the death rate down, that as of this morning, Florida is 27th among the states in death rate per 100,000 and one of the lowest among a large urban state, while also keeping the economy as open as possible. So it's that balance that Republicans and particularly conservative Republicans like about how DeSantis handled the COVID crisis.
On the other side, Florida has garnered plenty of criticism. And for those of us who live in Florida and speak to and look at media coverage elsewhere, we see that criticism. Spring break open. We see the video being played on cable TV of spring breakers on the beaches here in Florida, for instance. How could that criticism directed at Florida affect the governor in terms of his national standing with the fellow Republicans outside of the state?
I think what Republicans have seen is that Republican governors who adopt the Republican idea of balance are criticized, whereas Democratic governors who adopt the Democratic view of prioritizing control over other features are praised. And Republicans look and they say, well, look at these other governors, is that they have death rates significantly higher. The economy is out of whack in many of these states. So they didn't control the disease and they didn't save the economy. So they tend to discount this media criticism as being partisan driven and not based on the facts as has actually unfolded.
Yeah, you know, whether or not it's partisan driven, we could leave for another program, Henry, but
you
know, it's reflecting reality.
Believe.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And Florida is in a unique case in that, you know, hey, listen, there's no snow on the ground. It's a beautiful day. As I talked to you from South Florida today, it is, you know, early March. There's bad weather in plenty of other places, and folks can look longingly at Florida when we have these international travel restrictions at a place to come and behave in certain ways that they may not be able to behave in their own communities.
Well, I believe that's certainly been going on. Just anecdotally, I know a number of Republicans or conservatives who have gone to Florida for exactly that reason over the last few months and enjoyed it and come back without COVID. And that's one of the things is that when you have people experience that and say, here's a place that's more free and seems to be at a similar risk as back home, why weren't we doing this back home?
Henry, stick with us. We got a lot more to talk about as we're discussing kind of the politics and the rising star of Governor DeSantis with national Republicans. Henry Olson is our guest, senior fellow at the Conservative Ethics and Public Policy Center think tank, also a Washington Post columnist. Your phone calls, 305-995-1800. Send us your thoughts on Twitter at Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle. Politics, the pandemic, and Governor DeSantis, and really the view from outside Florida of the governor's policies. That continues next. We're back on the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. Thanks again for listening and supporting public media. We're talking about the attention Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has been getting from national Republican circles. 305-995-1800 to join our conversation. 305-995-1800 on Twitter at Florida Roundup is our handle there. Henry Olson continues with us, senior fellow at Ethics and Public Policy Center and a columnist for Washington Post. He joins us via Zoom. Henry, you know, there's two big elections, of course, for the governor. One is a potential reelection in 2022, and then whether or not he throws his proverbial hat into the ring into the 2024 presidential race. There may be three people from Florida running in 2024 here early on. How does the governor differentiate himself from former governor Rick Scott, now U.S. Senator, and the senior senator, Marco Rubio, who has already run for the White House once?
Yeah, I think what the Senate right now, the governor is on a high that there was a poll of Floridians showing that he would wipe both of them out with over 60% of the vote in the hypothetical three-way Floridian primary. Mm-hmm. Of course, people won't be voting based on the COVID reaction solely by 2024. And what he's going to need to do is build himself into a stronger pan-conservative person, which is say he's going to need to
be pan-conservative. Yeah. Explain that.
Yeah. What I mean is that there are many types of conservatives. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes you have people who will focus on one type, like a religious conservative or a business conservative or a small government tax cutting conservative. And the person who wins the nomination is somebody who has appeal among all of those groups, as opposed to really building up support among some. And that's what DeSantis needs to spend the next couple of years doing. He obviously needs a strong reelection. You know, he barely eked in last time. If he were to win by 5, 6, or as the polls recently show, 10 or 11 points over Crist and another Democrat, a poll came out this week, you know, that would set him up as somebody who could take, has strong support in the third largest state in the union. And he needs to embrace all of these things and show action on all of these things by 2024 to really move into the first tier.
Yeah, I want to ask you about some issues beyond the pandemic and the governor, but we've got a phone call here from Port Charlotte. Lori is calling in. Lori, thanks for listening and calling. You're on the radio.
All right, thanks, Tom. I do want to have, I have a little rebuttal against the phrase that DeSantis is getting, because he had a lot of non-answers early on when the pandemic started, and there was, you know, mass confusion in Florida as to what to do. And I think the numbers were brought down by various municipalities, the counties and the cities that created their own mandates. And while, you know, there was always a rise in adversarial comments about, you know, being controlled by people, I think it's the communities themselves is what has really saved Florida, not DeSantis.
Lori, I appreciate that perspective. Henry, how do you kind of see that from afar, as the governor clearly is the chief executive of Florida and upfront when it comes to national media? As Lori points out, there are plenty of municipal governments throughout the state that did institute tougher restrictions, including mask mandates and other restrictions that lasted longer than some of the state rules.
Yeah, you know, I think what's happening right now is that people judge what goes on in a state and ascribe it to the governor, whether that's legitimate or not. And so you just take a look. I think it was the most recent Florida poll that had DeSantis at a 53% job approval rating, the same one that had him 10 or 11 points ahead of Crist. Mm-hmm. And nationally, people don't follow what Miami versus Orlando versus Fort Myers are doing. And they see a governor who echoes themes that they believe in and see a success record. So they're willing to give him the credit, much as people in other states are willing to give their governors credit for things that are done, whether or not the governor's actual actions produced it.
Beyond the pandemic, Governor DeSantis has picked up on several issues pushed by the more conservative wing of the Republican Party these days, namely social media and public protests. The governor has said his number one legislative priority this legislative session, which is underway now in Tallahassee, is stopping what he has called censorship of conservatives online. His number one legislative priority. Other Republican leaders here in Florida have acknowledged that there's not a lot the state can really do. This is really more of a constitutional and national question. Why for DeSantis should he put his political capital into that kind of issue?
It is a very emotional issue right now with conservatives, particularly conservatives who vote in primaries and conservatives who are active in public affairs. They see Amazon and Google and others deplatforming conservatives. You can argue whether the concern meets the actual actions, but it is something that is very much on the minds of many conservatives. And by even doing something that would be as symbolic or a small effect, DeSantis can be one of the first people who says, I did something to help stop that, and that would boost his national profile. It's good politics.
Good politics, but does it cost political capital that could be otherwise spent on pandemic issues, for instance?
Well, I think that you'd have to ask yourself what the governor could be doing on pandemic issues that he's not already doing, particularly given the vaccine coming out. You know, I've read that the governor has announced that all people 55 and older are going to be eligible for the vaccine.
Down to 60 years old on Monday is when that begins here in Florida. But he's gotten plenty of criticism for being solely age-based and having different rules at state facilities compared to FEMA-supplied facilities, compared to the pharmacies and the hospitals. In other words, not one playbook in terms of eligibility.
Yeah, that doesn't seem to be hurting him politically right now, and I'm sure his people are thinking about that, whereas concerted push on something that is a major national issue among conservatives would give him significant benefit. And so I think they've decided, and I think probably rightly, that political capital with the legislature should be expended on that, and that he already has the ability to do a lot of things in the pandemic, and people think he's handling it pretty well.
And of course, the reality is there's the supermajority of Republicans in the state legislature, the same party that the governor, of course, belongs to. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We're talking about Governor DeSantis and political ambitions and kind of how those ambitions are seen from outside Florida by national Republicans. We're speaking with Henry Olson, senior fellow at Ethics and Public Policy Center and a columnist for The Washington Post. Henry, I wanted to ask you about the underlying political factors for Governor DeSantis. And what I guess what I'm referring to directly here is the former President Trump. On June 22nd, 2018, then President Trump sent a tweet about Ron DeSantis, who was a U.S. congressman at the point, running in the Florida Republican primary for governor. That presidential tweet included this line, quote, "He will be a great governor and has my full endorsement." Now, at the time, Republican Agriculture Commissioner here in Florida, Adam Putnam, had a double-digit lead over DeSantis in the Republican primary. DeSantis went on to have a blowout win, 20 points over Putnam, and then win the general election by less than a half a percent. So how much of DeSantis's depends on the popularity and the relevance of the former president?
I think there's no doubt that President Trump's endorsement and DeSantis's use of that endorsement is why he won the Republican primary. And the ad that he ran where his wife, Casey, is talking about what a great dad he is and everything he's doing with his children involves President Trump, build that wall, reading the art of the deal. You know, he drove that home. Since then, however, he has tried very much to be his own person. And I think his COVID success in elevating himself is proof that he's no longer tied to President Trump's coattails. He's playing it smart in that he's neither slavishly attaching himself to Trump nor distancing himself. And I think the more he can pull that off and develop his own brand, the less he will need to rely on Trump should he run for president.
What are the national political emotions that the governor is going to, you know, pay attention to tap into, but also those emotions that may be potential liabilities for his future ambition?
Right now, you should not be an open opponent of President Trump if you want to succeed President Trump in the Republican primary. DeSantis checks that box quite well. By 2024, we'll see where Trump's stature with the Republican voter base is. It could change. It could be stronger. It could be weaker. We'll also see how salient it is for the general election. At some point, he's going to have to differentiate himself from Trump in some way. But for right now, the course he's hewing, which is to say neither slavishness nor opposition, is the right course for him. And it seems to be paying dividends.
Henry Olson has been our guest. He's a senior fellow at the Conservative Ethics and Public Policy Center think tank and also a columnist at The Washington Post. You can find his column that he wrote on Governor DeSantis on our Twitter feed at Florida Roundup. Henry, thanks for sharing your thoughts with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Of course, you can follow all of us and continue that conversation on our Twitter feed at Florida Roundup is where you'll find us. That is our program statewide across the Sunshine State today. Thanks so much for joining us, for calling, listening, tweeting, and of course, supporting public radio. Our program is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami, also a partner in that. Denise Royal and Heather Schatz are our producers. Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming in Miami. We get engineering help, operational help, rather, and our technical director is Peter Mertz. Engineering help comes from these three folks, Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Thanks, guys. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Again, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle and support your local public radio station. For my co-host, Melissa Ross, I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening. Be well, and we'll talk with you next week.